Welcome to the Wannabe Hunting Podcast. This is your host, Amos Medford. Thanks for joining us today. I appreciate everyone who's been listening and supporting the podcast. Thank you so much. And we're excited to see where everything goes. And we're excited for the start of turkey season here in North Florida. Kicked off Saturday, got out there. Didn't get anything but swarmed by mosquitoes. But that's all right. We'll stay after them. So appreciate everybody tuning in to the turkey series. This is our 10th episode dedicated to turkey hunting. So that's pretty awesome. Everybody seems to be enjoying it. And we are full allergy season here in North Florida. So we've got coughing and sore throats and everything as usual for this spring. But we're hanging in there. I'm trying to hang in there in this intro without coughing or my voice cracking or whatever. But thank you so much for listening today. I'm excited to be joined by Brett Morris of Blue River Bow Hunting. He also hosts the Blue River Bow Hunting podcast. So big thanks to Brett for joining me today and jumping into all things turkey hunting. Of course, we touch on bow hunting and some other hunting that he does. So you'll enjoy this one with Brett and check out his stuff as well. And I really appreciate him coming on. Enjoyed the talk, and I think y'all will too. So let's jump into episode 10 of the turkey series with Brett Morris of Blue River Bow Hunting. Hey, Brett. Welcome back to the Wannabe Hunting Podcast. I'm excited to be joined tonight by Brett Morris of the Blue River Bow Hunting Podcast. Did I get that right?
Yes, sir. That's it.
Awesome, man. Well, thanks for taking some time to join me tonight. And if you don't mind, first of all, just kind of want to let you introduce yourself to the audience. And then, just kind of tell us how you got into hunting in general. And we'll go from there, getting into bow hunting and podcasting. And of course, we're going to be heavy on turkeys tonight with this time of year. But just go ahead and introduce yourself, man.
Yeah, I'm Brett Morris. I'm from East Central Indiana. I started 2 years ago on filming whitetails, and it just grew into a passion that became my brand, Blue River Bow Hunting. I also do a podcast, Blue River Bow Hunting Podcast, and it's just been fun to talk to. You know, I kind of my niche is the regular guy. You know, the regular guy that doesn't get enough attention, that kills monsters every year, that has that insight of just regular guys hunting, that would, some of the information that I get kind of really blows me out of the water. It really does, because there's regular guys that don't get enough attention, and they kill absolute giants, man. And, yeah. And I have such a fun time talking to those people.
Yeah, that's awesome. There's some guys actually in my neck of the woods, and they call themselves the part-timers. I'm like, man, that is so perfect. You know, they say we're overworked and underhunted. So, you know, that's kind of how it goes when you're a regular guy. But man, like you said, there are some guys absolutely getting it done. So that's pretty cool.
Oh, for sure. And to piggyback off your question, you know, you asked me how I got started in hunting. When I was 14 years old, I started hunting with my dad and my uncle at the time. You know, I started on whitetails. Couldn't get it done. And actually my first true passion in the outdoors was chasing turkeys. And it was just so much fun to learn that, because my dad and my uncle that I hunted with, they hadn't learned that yet. We all started at the same time, and it just became this process for all of us to learn together and have a good time doing it. You know, turkey camp for us was a vacation. It still is for me to this day. And I have such a fun time doing it that it needs to be passed on from generation to generation.
No doubt about that. And that's pretty cool, because we're going to dive into turkey hunting momentarily. And, you know, one of the questions I had down to ask you was, you know, where turkeys rank on your favorite animal to chase. So we're going to just let that hang out there for a minute, and everybody can hang on there. The edge of their seat to see if that's your favorite still, since that's kind of how you started or not. But give us real quick, you know, how did you end up starting the Blue River bow hunting, and then the podcast as well? How did that come about, and that will kind of tie that in.
You know, it's a funny story because when I was young in my early 20s, you know, there was a group of guys that hung out at my house and we all duck hunted together. It was just this fun thing that we had that, you know, I'd wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning and there's three guys asleep in my living room floor, two guys on the couch. Like everybody was wanting to hang out with us because we were duck hunting. And it was kind of the fun thing to do at the time. And we called ourselves the Blue River Bottom Boys because we hunted Blue River here in East Central Indiana. And okay. It just became this thing. And then we tried to film the waterfowl type of thing, and it didn't really work out for us, so we just more had fun with it. And I was sitting there one day in the duck blind. It's November 20th, you know, it's the rut for deer, and I'm sitting in a duck blind and we hadn't seen a duck all day. And I looked at my buddy, I said, what are we doing in this duck blind? You know, we done seen three bucks chase does across the field while we're sitting in this duck blind. Like, let's go chase whitetails, man. Like, let's get back after it. So me and my cousin Alan started chasing whitetails and we started filming it. It was just this thing that became a contest between me and him. You know, what mostly could we get on film and have fun doing it and hunting together and bow hunting together. And I upgraded and I was like, hey man, I'm going to buy a nice setup and like, let's do this right. Have a nice setup, film these whitetails and let's put it out on YouTube or something. So we came up with a name and that's just what we came up with: Blue River Bow Hunting.
Nice.
We did it for a couple of years chasing big whitetails, and man, it's unbelievable the stories that we get here in the Midwest chasing big bucks. And I don't know, it just became into that. And then I was actually producing a predator hunting podcast for some people that live close to me, and had a lot of fun in the podcast game. And I was like, you know, it's my turn. I want to do one. You know, I got enough knowledge and I'm pretty good at social media people and you know, talking to others. And I feel like it would just fit me just great to be a host. And it's turned out perfect for me, really.
Yeah, that's cool. And, you know, we started literally in the same month, you know, July of last year. It's just crazy. And, you know, it's kind of like, do we really need another hunting podcast? You know, there's literally a million or whatever, but you know what, that's the beauty of it. You can do your own and you can ask questions how you want and you can to an extent invite the guest you want, you know, as long as you can get a hold of them and stuff. So that's pretty cool. But
oh, for sure, you know, you make it your own, you know. And it's funny, me and you started in the same month, and Hunt the Wild podcast with my buddy Adam Bowles. He started around the same time as us, and I had already recorded three episodes or so. So he kind of was asking me a lot of questions. I set him up as best as I could. And now our shows are like familiar. Like we have the same thing going on, but it's so vastly different because we're two different type of people. You know, you're going to make that thing your own. And we've bounced. I've had him on my show a couple times. I've been on his show several times, and it's been just a cool thing to interact with another person that wants to do the same thing that I'm doing. And it's funny because, you know, you talk about social media and networking on social media. We actually met on TikTok out of all places.
Wow.
And we've just became, I mean, I text him more in a day than I probably do my wife. You know, like, I don't know. We just bounce ideas off of each other. Like, hey, listen to my show from this week. I want your honest thoughts. Don't hold back. We do that for each other. And it's made us better podcasters, I think.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. And that's one of the things that has amazed me the most about the whole thing is how many good people, cool people, unbelievably helpful people. I mean, they're willing to help with hunting tips and tactics. They're willing to help with the podcast, social media, supporting each other. It's really been a positive experience for me.
Absolutely. And it's crazy because I've heard your show before. I listened in prior to being on this, and I've heard you say that you're a new onset hunter, you're new into the hunting world. And the more that you absorb in these podcasts and really listen to people that have been doing it for a really long time, and you pick up on things here and there, it's going to make you a better hunter. And I think that's why people love podcasts. They love listening to other people give tips and tactics. They may not know, they maybe don't have that experience. So they're listening to it from somewhere else and somewhere else and somewhere else, and they're putting everything together together. They're going in the outdoors, experiencing for themselves, and making a whole new adventure for themselves because they're getting that knowledge.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And it's been one of the biggest things that encouraged me to get out and go. You know, that's getting into hunting, you know, as an adult. And it's just, you know, there's not a ton of programs out there and stuff like that. And, you know, thankfully I have some friends who do hunt, but, you know, working out schedules and everything else, it gets pretty crazy with work and the family and everything else. But just, you know, saying, hey, if I've got an afternoon, I'm just going to go, you know. I mean, I'm not talking about burning spots and hunting wrong winds and just being crazy with it, but I'm just saying, even like this past year, I went on literally the last day of duck season, killed my first duck.
That's one, awesome.
You know, killed one, but it was amazing. And it's
that's better than nothing, ain't it? You know, duck hunting, you know, where I'm from here in the Midwest, you know, right where I'm at, we really don't get a ton of ducks, but we were traveling to hunt ducks. And that's the thing I love about duck hunting personally is the camaraderie of it. You know, you're hanging with your buddies, you're not really worried about scent, or I mean, most of the time you're not even worried about noise. You know, you're just kind of tucked back up in your blind and oh, here they come, you know, and everybody gets down and everybody does their thing. And I don't know, that's why I love duck hunting. And yeah, duck hunting is harder than people think, I think. Like, you got to have a good spot, you know what I mean?
Yeah it can be challenging for sure, but that's kind of cool that you know, we talked more than I expected about duck hunting, but I've just, you know, just been getting into it this past year. So I'm looking forward to doing more of that next year. But man, ducks, deer, you know, you've got your Western stuff, elk, depending on where you're at, might have bear or go somewhere to hunt bear. There's no season here in Florida, but it's coming up on turkey season.
Oh yeah. So, I'm ready, buddy.
I have been ready, man. I'm going Saturday.
Oh, you lucky. Lucky.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I got to wait a few more weeks. Well, almost a month.
Oof. Yeah. Oof. That's tough. I bet you're going to be listening to a whole bunch of turkey podcasts, watching absolutely a bunch on YouTube.
Yeah, bunch of that stuff and doing turkey shows on my own show. It's helping the fix, and then it's also making it a million times worse because I'm talking about it once a week. So it's really getting me fired up.
Yep. Yep. Helps a little bit and then makes it worse at the same time. It's funny. Right. You know, go ahead and tell us where do turkeys rank for you? You know, is the whitetail number one, or is turkey edged out for you, or how does it work for you?
Turkey was my first love when it came to the outdoor, you know, adventures with your dad and your family and everything. Turkey was my first love for sure. And it's crazy because ducks might even been like a close second on that, but
right,
there is something about chasing a giant whitetail in the Midwest. There's no feeling like it. I can't even explain it to you. You know, November day, it's 25, 30 degrees, wind blowing out of the north. You know, it's just, it'll just get you fired up. I mean, if you haven't experienced it, something you have to in your lifetime, if you're an outdoorsman, you have to experience chasing whitetails in the Midwest. There's nothing like it.
Yeah. I've already been told a few times, like, you need to check out Illinois, Indiana, Kentucky. Some of these places. I have a friend who lives in Kansas. So it's like, all right.
Oh, yeah.
Midwest Kansas is where it's at.
Oh, for sure. With its whitetails, that's the ticket. Trust me.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Well, you know, you have literally a bow hunting brand, bow hunting podcast. But we're talking about turkeys today. And of course, you know, every single day I'm opening up Instagram and I'm seeing everybody and their brother patterning their shotgun. And I'm going to use a shotgun. But if I get one early with a shotgun, I'm going to bust out the bow. So, do you bow hunt turkeys? Do you do shotgun and bow, one or the other, both?
I do both. Last year was probably my first major attempt at it. I had done it in years past, but this past year I did a trip out to Missouri, and that was my mindset. That's what I went there for, bow hunting turkeys. But it's extremely difficult, and that I struggle on that challenge. I'm still struggling on that challenge.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, you gotta have them pretty close. I mean, it's gotta be the right the right deal for sure.
Yeah, you got to be in the right setup. Everything has to go right for you. Your calling, your setup, your scouting, everything has to come into play for you to shoot a turkey with the bow.
Yeah, for sure. And I definitely want to spend some time on calls, you know, what calls you have, how you use them, stuff like that. But, mm-hmm. you know, when it comes to bow hunting, are you using like a totally different setup with your bow, like arrow, broadhead, poundage, compared to what you use when you're deer hunting, or is it similar, tweaked? How does that work for you?
Tweaked. Like I keep everything the same as far as my bow. You know, I want it to be the same every time I'm shooting a 60-pound draw. The only thing I'm really changing on my bow setup is the broadheads. You know, I go from a fixed blade to sort of a fixed blade. I use VPA, which is Vantage Point Archery out of Fort Wayne, Indiana. They make a broadhead just for turkeys. It's called the Turkey Spur. And, it, you know, it's a fixed blade, but it's kind of hard to explain. It's kind of longer. It's really hard to explain, but it's made for a turkey and not necessarily a headshot with your bow. You know, when you bow hunt turkeys, you have such a small zone that you hit, whether you're shooting at their head, which you know how small that can be. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, their vitals, which is at the base of their neck, set back just a little bit. And it's a very, very small window to hit. But if you can hit it, you know, it's game over.
Right. Okay, cool. Yeah. I was just curious about that, you know, from a technical standpoint, if you switched up a lot or kept it, you know, relatively similar.
Yeah.
What about your shotgun? Do you just tell me what gun you have and what ammo you prefer or anything like that, choke or whatever?
Yeah, I have a Mossberg 835 with the TruGlow sights. I've shot Longbeard XRs. I've shot the TSSs. I've shot just about everything out of it. They pattern about the same. The TSSs might be just a little better at a little bit of a longer range, but the Longbeard XRs aren't bad either. I try to stay away from the cheaper turkey load. They don't shoot as well, but yeah, Mossberg A35, and cool. It was a hand-me-down from my uncle, which has been pretty cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, always good to have a family gun. That's sweet. That's cool. I've used Longbeard XR as well. That's the only ammo I've actually used. So I think I'm going to experiment with some TSS at some point, but, you know, it's not broken. My box isn't empty yet, so, you know, no rush.
Yeah, right, especially as expensive as they are.
Oh, I know. That's crazy. But I think a lot of people are probably shooting whatever they can get, you know, online or in person, you know, anything in stock, people will shoot.
Oh, absolutely.
But anyway, man, could you talk a little bit about the calls that you have and use? And I mean, I know we can go any direction with this as far as what you use in certain circumstances, what's your favorite, what is your first call, you know, whatever. But man, let's talk about talk about turkey calls.
I'm a big zinc guy. I don't know what did that for me, but at some point I seems like all the calls I have, all my diaphragms are zinc. My slate call is zinc. You know, I have some other, like, I have a custom-made box call. I can't remember what the company is. I'd have to even pull it out of my vest. I've had it for years. Most of the calls I've had for years, except for my diaphragms, I like to switch them up, you know, every other year. So as long as you take care of them, they're good. But I'm kind of a big diaphragm guy. You know, I love using diaphragm, especially in certain situations. You know, a bird hangs up and you don't have to move and you're using your mouth, and just being able to control the volume and the pitches and everything. I've gotten good at it, especially at a young age. I started turkey hunting when I was 14, and I picked it up relatively easily. I can remember going to turkey camp when I was younger, 15, 16, 17 years old, and everybody asked me for advice and how, you know, I'd barely started turkey hunting, but they liked the way I used the diaphragms. And I don't know if I just picked it up from, I don't know, just using my brain or being, you know, having woodsmanship or what, but I picked up the language of turkeys very early on, being able to, you know, read a situation or how a bird's reacting or how he's responding and being able to play off him and call a bird in. it was a lot of fun to go through those situations at a young age. And then, you know, when you get older, when I kind of know kind of what I have to do to a certain point, it can be a lot of fun, even especially taking first time, you know, turkey hunter, somebody that maybe never been in the turkey woods before, right? You know, and you start really talking their language and you get him fired up. Somebody that's a rookie in the woods gets really fired up.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. That's cool, man. I struggle a little bit with the mouth calls. You know, I haven't quite got there with the diaphragms, but I can really see the hands-free, no movement or very little movement aspect of it being like a huge plus, you know, to those.
Right.
But, you know what, let's see, are you going to use like a locator call the night before or the morning of, or
both,
you know, kind of? What are some scenarios there? I know it depends on where you're at. And...
Right. Well, where I go down to Kentucky every year, you know, and all my turkey experiences with an Eastern bird, I've never hunted any other subspecies. It's all Eastern birds. I hunt Kentucky, Indiana. Okay. This year I'm going to Michigan for the first time. It's all Eastern birds. So, oh, and I've hunted Missouri. It was an Eastern bird as well. And they all acted very similar.
Right.
It just matters kind of the situation, but the night before is definitely huge. I like going out, you know, in Kentucky, I ride the rhino up on the farm and get to a certain point where something can hear me. And I know where I think the birds are going to be, and I'll do the owl call. That's probably my favorite in the evening. And then kind of a rule of thumb in the morning, I don't do anything. And I say, I don't touch a call out of my vest until I've heard the first crow go off at least. As soon as that first crow goes off, and it's right there about that time, if that Tom hears that, he is going to absolutely let loose. You know, right. That's something that gets him fired up. So I'll base it off that, and, you know, and you can tell with an Eastern almost, like, is he fired up? Is he not? You know, then you really need to listen. You know, most people just focus on that gobble. You need to focus on more than just the gobble. You need to focus on those hens. What are those hens telling him? And how many hens are there? You know, if you can pick out, yeah, there's four or five hens in there, you know, it might be rough on you. You know, if he comes down and hits the ground and he's got six or seven hens with him, that could be a huge problem for you. But, you know, and listening for that, listen for multiple birds. Have a bird as a one option and a bird as a two. Like, you know, they're polar opposite ends of the farm. But this bird, they didn't sound like there was any hens with him. He gobbled at everything, a goose going by, the cow mooing in the field. Like, it didn't matter what the sound was, he was gobbling. And just make your move after that. But locator calls, definitely an owl and a crow every once in a while.
Okay, gotcha. And let's kind of use a scenario of you've set up, thankfully, you got a good idea where they're at, and you've set up what you would call pretty close, and, you know, a crow goes off or whatever, and you hear a gobble, and it comes from the direction you're expecting and everything like that. You know, are you going to kind of call lightly? Are you going to try to wait till you hear something fly down? Or, I mean, I guess that would be if you're really close, but...
Right. And I pay attention to that. You know, if I'm sitting there and I start and I haven't even made a call yet, you know, sometimes even if he's doing the thing and you don't need to do that, I might do a couple of soft tree yelps. Talk sweet to him. You don't need to get loud, especially if you're close. Don't sound unnatural. Don't sound like a hen that woke up out of her bed and is screaming at people, you know, like talk a little sweet to him, you know, and he'll let you know if he likes it or not. Obviously, you know, he's going to gobble or whatever, and pay attention if he's gobbling to those other birds. But just talk real sweet to him and see where it goes from there. Hopefully he flies down your way. And then, you know, we got obviously get into a situation if you're using a decoy or not. But just soft tree yelps, you know, I might do a fly down sequence with a wing or my hat or something like that. The only time I really do that is if I've seen one pitch down or I can physically hear one pitch down. You know, whatever. And then I may do it myself.
Right. I gotcha. Do you find that you ever use like some kind of friction call or something to be louder on a, you know, I've heard people say like on a windy day or something like that?
Mostly a box call.
Box.
you know, box call, you can be really loud with those things and really raspy. A good windy day, especially down there in the open pastures of Kentucky where I hunt turkeys, you know, sometimes the wind does pick up, you know, and you need to get loud, and you may just get lucky and he hears you from a distance. And then it's a whole nother game. And then you got to see how fast you can close the distance before he realizes that you've closed the distance. And then maybe throw a couple more notes out for him for you to kind of pinpoint where you're at.
Right. Right. Now jumping back to diaphragm calls, do you carry you always carry three or, you know, something like that?
I think I have three different cases that I keep in my vest, and I think they hold about five apiece. So I got about 15 with me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I have an over obsession, but I have options, and sometimes a certain call will sound better to him or whatever, you know, and just get him fired up.
Yeah. And I've heard some people say, you know, they don't know anything about the cuts, or the cuts don't matter or whatever, but is there certain, you know, cuts that you like? I mean, of course, they got all kind of stuff now with bat wings and whatever, but
yeah,
you know, is there something that you use maybe for a certain types of call, you know, this one is better for purring, or this one, you know, just different stuff like that. But
I think one I always just kind of go back to is that split V, you know, kind of the bat wing like you're talking about. And
right,
know, I don't know, you know, you get the double stack reads that sound good. There's so many different reads they can use. It honestly just depends on you as a person. Sometimes I don't know why, but like a split V will sound better in my mouth, and I get the, you know, a side cut or whatever, and I just throw it in the trash. Just depending on how it came out of my mouth, I guess. Shorter answer.
Right. Yeah. You know, and I have watched some of the videos talking about, you know, where the channel is or whatever, but you know, that's kind of getting into, I guess, anatomy. Pretty... I don't know.
Right.
Flows through your mouth.
Getting back into that, like a thing, like I was telling you, like being able to be loud with it and being able to control the volume of doing just really soft yelps or a really aggressive yelps or, you know, a cut, you know, and getting all crazy and getting him fired up. And it can just be fun kind of practicing that too. You might get your wife all mad though.
Yeah. Yeah, I try not to practice too much around the house, but you know, this time of year they come out, so you know, we'll make it through though.
Oh yeah, it's a short season.
Yeah, exactly. That's cool. Well, we've already gotten, you know, for me personally, you know, I've already gotten a good bit of advice from you. You know, honestly, just some things to try, some things to keep in mind. But, you know, as a newer hunter myself, I always like to, you know, throw out the question of what would you give as advice to a new hunter and, you know, a new turkey hunter? And I know there's so much equipment. There's so many different variables, you know, area of the country and access, you know, whether or not they have somewhere private or going somewhere on public land. You know, there's all kinds of advice you could give to a newer hunter, but you know, what would you say to a newer hunter or someone that you were either going to take turkey hunting or just were trying to talk into going or whatever, you know, kind of how would you go about that with a new hunter?
Definitely. You know, you're going to get so much information from different places, podcasts, YouTube, you know, all that kind of stuff. Your buddies that may have been doing it for 15 years, and sometimes you can get so much of an overload of information as as a new hunter, I think. And my personal advice to somebody that's new, and doesn't matter what kind of hunting it is, I want you to experience it for yourself. Learn the lessons. You know, I may tell you, hey, November 7th, but it's hot. Bucks are going. It's going to happen, you know, but you still need to experience that for yourself to be able to realize, okay, I know what he's talking about here. I saw all the turkeys doing this, and then they switched to doing this. Like you experienced it, you know, you can, you know, listen to somebody all day and have somewhat of an idea in your head, but until you experience it, you don't even really know what you're talking about because you've never experienced it. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And I know I listen to a ton of podcasts and watch stuff on YouTube, and, you know, I got relatively lucky, I would say, like the second year I went turkey hunting and killed a nice, gobbler that, you know, someone told me what spot to go in, and they had everything, you know, very, very helpful to get me set up. And I actually went back to that same spot with my brother-in-law and tried to get, you know, get him one. And I was just using a box call at that time. And, you know, we had a good Tom coming in right in front of us, and a decoy set up and everything. And we ticked off a hen behind us, and man, he beelined across the field to her. And like, it was like, man, I've heard about stuff like this, but
yeah,
you know, now I just saw how hard it is for you to beat out a real live turkey.
Yeah. And then you've seen his reactions to everything, right? So it's like, yeah, okay, we did this and he definitely didn't like this. So let's mm-hmm. not do that anymore. Let's do it this way or whatever, you know, like, you know, you have to trick him in so many, you know, circumstances, and you're talking to him or making his situation look good. You have decoys out, or maybe it's a situation where you want him to come in running and try to beat your decoy up, you know, just to, you have to be able to understand the nature of the bird and what he's thinking. There's so many times I can tell you, I've been with buddies and, you know, those birds gobbled and all of a sudden they're getting really loud with the calls, they're getting aggressive, and then all of a sudden he shuts up and they're like, well, there ain't no turkeys around here. And then, you know, they stand up to go elsewhere and the turkey's 30 yards behind the tree. They just didn't see it because they weren't patient enough or, you know, or whatever. But you just have to learn those lessons on your own on any type of hunting, which makes you a better outdoorsman.
No doubt. That's like I was telling you, the last day of duck season, I killed my first duck. Well, I was on a dam in between two ponds, and when I shot that duck, like 15 turkeys jumped up.
Oh, that's awesome.
I was like,
yeah, I'm coming back here.
I believe I'll be back here in the spring.
Right.
But yeah, it's just being observant, you know, whether it's season or not, you know, same thing if you're deer hunting, if there's turkeys all over you, you know, they do act different in the spring, but you know, there's still a good hint for you right there that
for sure around. It just shows you that there's a population. And to get into another point that I don't know if anybody's ever told you or not, but from what I've experienced personally, turkeys will roost different between the fall and the spring. It's like a whole nother section of the property or mm-hmm. whatever. And I don't know, when I've duck hunted before, there was this property where there was birds gobbling in January. I don't understand that at all, but they were gobbling up on this roost while we're duck hunting. And I told my buddy kind of the same thing, like, hey, we should definitely come back in here. He's like, oh, no, they have total different roost spots. I'm like, really? So and I've heard that over the years by listening to several different people, and I was like, well, that's good to know. You know, don't focus your turkey scouting on, you know, fall details that you get off of, you know, game cameras and stuff. You know, when you're scouting on turkeys, you know, they're going to tell you exactly where they're at, especially if you're scouting a week before ahead of time. You know, they're creatures of habit. They're going to do the same things over and over again to a certain extent.
Right. Yeah. I was reading an article today, and it was talking about that. It's like, they're going to kind of follow a pattern, but you just, you know, they might go to one spot, you know, every morning at 8 o'clock for a week. And then the next day they'll still go to that spot, but it's 4 p.m.
Right.
You know, they found some bugs somewhere else, or they got, you know, spooked off by something and it threw off their schedule. You know, it's like,
oh, for sure.
They are creatures of habit. And if you can figure out where they are, you know, you've fought a lot of the battle, but I didn't guarantee that the day you got off work, there's going to one walk by you.
Yeah. You just got to kind of know the general direction to walk.
Yeah. I mean, I'll take any hints I can get, but
definitely.
That's awesome. Well, I appreciate that, man. Definitely good info. Cause I mean, you know, I love hearing, you know, I love hearing about, I think a lot of people in the hunting in general, but in podcasts too, like it's cool for me to hear about gear. You know, I like to know what, you know, what calls somebody has, what brand of this they prefer or whatever. Right. Doesn't mean I'm going to run out and buy it, but right. that's interesting to me. But, you know, I think some of that stuff, you know, people will think, well, that person's just, you know, they're probably just sponsored or, you know, something like that. And it's like,
right.
There's a whole lot you can learn, you know, and do without shooting, you know, still shooting lead, you know, not shooting PSS.
Right.
Without, you know, without the most expensive calls or whatever, but
definitely,
you know, there's a ton you can get into, and it's fun to learn. I think that's another thing that kind of ties podcasts together and podcasters together, is it's kind of a learning platform, you know. There's a lot of things out there really based on entertainment, which is cool, and I like entertainment and hunting entertainment, but you know, some of it's not as educational.
Right. Well, that's why I was saying earlier with my show, you know, you get a lot of shows out there, which they're aiming for, like, you know, the top of the top on guests who are going to bring you a lot of attention. And then there's guys like me who like to talk to regular dudes, blue collar workers that, you know, may not get off work until dark sometimes or whatever, but they have it figured out. You know, they're killing very big deer, they're killing turkey, they're doing this, and you know, there's no social media spotlight on those guys. They're doing it just like we're doing it, you know what I mean? They're not getting paid to push anything. They're going to tell you their honest opinion on and how they do it pretty much mm-hmm. every time.
Yeah, and I love that, because to me, that's part of my goal in learning, is to figure out some of the, you know, what are people doing to, you know, manage their time in such a way that they get out more, or make, you know, really make more of the times they get out, is kind of, I guess, what it really comes down to. So right. It's pretty cool to learn, you know, from stuff like that. But anyway, man, this has been fun, but
for sure,
I want to give you a chance to tell a hunting story. You know, I mean, I'm sure there's a bunch that you could, you know, it could be maybe one of your first ones or one of the most recent, or just one that was memorable for one reason or the other. But, you know, I think that's the other thing, whether it's educational or not, you know, we like hearing hunting stories.
Well, I'll give you a wild one. So since we did turkey for the most part on this episode, I'll give you a turkey episode.
Okay.
So, I'm 17 years old. My cousin's 14 at the time. We go down to the youth season, in Kentucky, and you know, my dad and them are kind of like, just go take him out there, see if you can get on a bird. They had very little faith in me as a 17-year-old guide at the time. And I'm like, I'll take him out there. Let's go. So I take my cousin out there. He has a broken arm. His arm is in a cast.
Oh, boy.
And he's shooting my turkey gun, which is at the time a New England Arms 10-gauge single shot. It's a mini cannon, if you
will. Oh, man.
It will knock you over. And he was a little feller at the time, still a little feller at this time. You know, he's 5'2", maybe a 110 soaking wet, like just a little guy.
Oh, man.
We're down on this ridge that we call the Cliffhanger. It's mm-hmm. butts up to Lake Cumberland in Kentucky. You know, it kind of shelves off, as you kind of see in that southeastern kind of look. And mm-hmm. These birds are hammering. I mean, there's like 4 to 5 of them. They're gobbling with every call that I make. And I can't wonder as to why they're not coming towards me. So we start making our way down. You know, we can tell they're not super close. And we realize that we're on the edge of the lake. I mean, it drops off 400 to 500 foot down to this lake. And we're like, well, that's why they're not coming over here. We're on the edge of the lake. You know, we were young and just having fun at the time. And we kind of tuck our tail between our legs, you know, lesson learned on that. You know, they weren't where we thought we were. We didn't know the land as much. So mm-hmm. we go walking back up this ridge, and we get to the top, and we call it a strut zone. A lot of birds strutted in this particular end of a horse pasture up on this high ridge where you could get out in the sun for a bird.
Right.
And I said, well, let's see if we can strike up another bird and see what happens. So I start calling, and all of a sudden, every one of those birds that we thought was across the lake gobbled, but they didn't gobble across the lake. They gobbled on our side of the lake. And I'm like, did I just call 4 birds over here? So we make like a beeline down to the corner of this fence, and we plop down in the corner of the fence. We got a kind of a lot of a brush behind us, and we're kind of blended in. And there's this old logging road that comes up from the bottom. and all I see is tail fans and black, and I'm like, this is about to happen. This kid's about to kill a giant. So all these birds are coming up this logging road, and they're about 35 yards, and I just let out like a really excited, you know, with my mouth call, just burp, 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 and all four of these birds gobble in our face, and I'm like, oh, I'm shaking at this point, you know, I'm fired up, and I can see he's kind of dialed in, he's not really affected by it. I'm like, hey, dude, pick any one of those birds out and drop it. So he pulls the hammer back on the 10 gauge. Boom! And all these birds just sit there. I'm like, how did he miss it that close with this gun? And I'm kind of like giggling at this point, you know, because he's my cousin and we're like brothers. And I'm kind of laughing. I'm like, don't move. I have your shells in my vest. Just open the action to the gun. I'll slide a shell in, and then you pick another bird out. So he pops the gun open. I slide this shell in, and he pulls the trigger again. Boom! And all these birds just fly off. And I'm like, dude, what happened? Like, are you serious? These birds are at, you know, after the first shot, they kind of scrambled a little bit, like all in a big circle. And one was at like, I don't know, 15 yards. I mean, I could have hit it with my bow, no problem. And he said that's the one he shot at. And I said, what happened, man? Y'all good? I thought it might have been like his broken arm. You know, I'm feeling like a dick at this point. And he's like, I forgot to turn the red dot on the gun. I'm like, oh, my. So he was just blank shooting into this scope on this 10 gauge, like just putting the bird in frame and pulling the trigger. You're not seeing a red dot anywhere in that frame and just not having the composure to turn it on, I guess.
That is hilarious, man. Yeah, that kind of makes a difference if you can put the dot on.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and at this point, you know, my dad and uncle are, you know, at the turkey camp at our campers where we own this property. And, you know, they said when they heard the second shot go off, he goes, oh, he must have missed both times because there wouldn't have been another time with that 10 gauge.
Right.
And they said they looked up the ridge and I was power walking about 100 yards ahead of him because I was so mad because I got in these birds right in his face. You know, I hadn't even really had that opportunity for myself at that point.
Oh, man. I bet you were ticked off at that point. That's crazy, though. I thought you were going to say after the first shot, you went to, like, talk to him, and he was, like, you know, on his back or something.
he landed on his back, I think, after the second shot, but he didn't hit anything.
Oh, my goodness, man. Well, that was a good story. That'll be a good one to close us out on, man. That's a pretty solid way to finish. I think that's hilarious.
That's awesome, man. I'm glad you had me on, man.
I first you know, saw you and started seeing you on Go Wild, man. Could you just let everybody know where to follow you and find out what you've got coming up, and whether you want to direct them there or Instagram or YouTube or whatever.
For sure. You know, check us out on anything. You know, everybody has kind of different platforms they run with, but I'm on about every one of them. Facebook, I'm big on Twitter. We have Instagram as well. Go Wild has been such a fun thing to do and endorse on our show.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, get on there and meet everybody, and, you know, your content isn't censored, and, you know, and everybody, you could ask a question and somebody's going to give you, you know, their real advice to you. And it's been fun to meet a lot of people on there. And I met you on there, and, you know, seeing people posting about your show. And then I think I commented on it or something like, you guys should do a show together. I'm like, I'm game. Let's do it, buddy.
Yeah. I can't remember who said it, but somebody commented, I guess they listened to both of us and like, y'all really should do one together. Like, sure.
Why not? I'm always down to talk.
Cool, man. Well, I really appreciate it. And, appreciate you being flexible with your time this evening and helping me out there. So good luck in about a month. And I hope you get the job done, man.
I appreciate that, everybody. You know, check my show out too, Blue River Bow Hunting, and check us out on all social media apps, and I appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
I just want to thank everyone once again for listening to the Wannabe Hunting Podcast. I really appreciate it. And a big thank you also to Brett for joining me on this episode. Enjoyed talking with him, and learning more about what he does out hunting. So I hope you guys enjoyed it as well. Thank you once again for tuning in, and I appreciate all the support. Of course, the best way to support us is just listening, leaving a review, leaving a rating on iTunes or Spotify, I believe you can as well, and sharing the episode if you enjoy it. That always helps. We really appreciate it. And I just want to say good luck to everybody out turkey hunting. I know I've seen a few guys already getting the job done, so congrats to y'all, and keep rooting for the rest of us who are trying to get it done. So good luck to everyone out there if your season hasn't opened or if you're still plugging away. So thanks for listening today, and as always, honor God, work hard, and keep hunting.